What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show, Last Exit to Brooklyn, LE2B. My name is Tom McCaffrey. I'm here with Eric B.
I'm here. We're back, baby.
What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing well. It's summer's over and COVID's still going on, so get ready for a horrible fall.
Cool. Well, I'm glad you had a good summer. It's changed your positive outlook. Before we start, rate and review this podcast. Please subscribe. Please join our Patreon page for bonus content. We're sponsored by Silk City Hot Sauce. Go to silkcityhotsauce.com. And if you use the promo code Brooklyn, you get 20% off all your hot sauce needs.
It's great hot sauce. Big fan.
Yeah, we love that hot sauce. It's hot and saucy. So you were just playing, that song you played was from Boardwalk Empire?
Yeah, and then I'm sure everyone's aware of the news. One of the stars of the show, Michael K. Williams, OD'd, or they think he might have OD'd, and he played Chalky White on the show. I know for most people that isn't his most popular role. It's like Omar on The Wire, but I was into Boardwalk Empire, and I thought he was a great actor.
What was first, The Wire or Boardwalk?
The Wire. And it seems like because he was on The Wire, that was on HBO, right? And then Boardwalk was. And then I know he was in that small series, The Night Of.
Yeah.
He was like an HBO staple. I thought he might have been in Oz, but I'm not sure about that. I don't think he was in Oz.
Yeah. But he grew up in New York and he was... I saw The Night Of. I really liked it. And I saw The Wire the first two seasons. And he was one of those actors. He was really good, but he was really good because you didn't know anything about him. And he really seemed like dangerous. You know what I mean? It didn't seem like he was acting. Like, he looked scary.
Yeah, with that scar on his face.
Like, the scar on his face really, like, kind of gave him some, like, gravitas, I guess. You just felt like you're watching some dude who really was, like, in The Night Of, he's in jail. He kind of runs the jail.
And when he died, when I heard it, because I follow that guy, Jeffrey Wright. Do you know him? He was also in Boardwalk Empire. He's a great actor.
Yeah, he hasn't been in a lot, right? Was he in Westworld?
Yeah, he was in Westworld, Boardwalk. He's like in a million things. And he tweeted something out. I'm like, uh-oh. And then I looked it up. And, when you see someone in their 50s die, I mean, if they're a celebrity now, you're not thinking COVID anymore. So my first move is to think, OD, especially someone like him. He wasn't really like overweight or anything like that. So you're like, yeah, it's got to be something like that.
So we have a guest coming on and soon. And I guess we'll talk more about that when he comes on, because he's great deals in that. We have a really good guest. He's the founder of like a really big celebrity gossip site that focuses on African-Americans media takeout. Mm-hmm. His name is Fred Mwanga Gahanga. I think I'm saying that right. Yeah. I actually did research to find out if I'm saying that right. Because I hate it like when, as doing comedy, people like get my name wrong all the time. And it's weird. Like, I did a show last night. I don't think my name's that hard.
Where they say McCafferty?
Well, that one, or last night, the guy was like, okay, so Tom McCarthy, like they keep saying McCarthy. So that happened twice last night. Like,
I could see that, though.
Another guy. I mean, I guess, but I'm like McCaffrey, and he's like, okay, McCarthy, and I'm like, I didn't say like that's like, and I was like McCaff, like McCaffeine. But anyway, do you have that? Like,
yeah, that's why I switched to Eric B. I can't take it anymore. So,
would they get your name wrong a lot?
Yeah, a lot. And the thing is that I waited long enough where people don't really remember Eric B. and Rakim. Well, every once in a while, there's somebody, but I think I've
passed that. And I think they'll probably know that you're not
a 1980s rapper.
Yeah, 1989 black rapper. So we'll talk about that. But so speaking of like overdosing, so there's a story. I don't know if you heard about it, where at some party in LA, these three comedians OD'd, and one comedian, well, three of them OD'd and died. One of them, and another one OD'd and lived. Wow. And one of them was the one who lived was Kate Quigley. You said you knew her kind of?
I mean, not like I ran into her a few times. I was on a show, I think, with her and stuff. She's an LA comic. But yeah, I mean, that's Wow. I mean, that
sounds like a shitty party.
Yeah. You kind of wonder with that. Like, I don't know with cocaine. Like, so they were snorting cocaine and it was laced with fentanyl.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that in that situation, I don't know, but maybe they were just doing a lot before they realized what happened. You know?
Well, so fentanyl, that's like what would kill. It seems like everyone gets killed by that. Who does that? Michael Jackson? Is he?
No, it was Prince, Tom Petty, apparently. It's fucking like hardcore. It's like I think it's like heroin to the 10th degree.
What is it? It's like a pill?
The pill, or, you know, they can do it in different forms. My father, a few years back, was having some really bad back issues, and this is when they were prescribing opioids to everybody, and they gave him these fentanyl patches, you know? And
wow.
You just put it on your body so it releases it. That's what Prince had, a patch. You need so much fentanyl, you kind of need it released into your body consistently all day. And I don't know if my father ever used it, because it was like, then I started reading about it. I'm like, maybe you shouldn't do this. And I'm telling you right now, in my house, there was like, I took them from him, and I think he had like, there were like 10 fentanyl patches that I just took and kept in my house.
Ever use it?
No, but I was reading them. Like, you could sell those on the black market and make tons of money. I didn't do that, obviously, but, you know, the drugs.
I believe didn't you sell them to Prince and Tom Petty?
I did. I wanted to take them both out, and I did. I was successful.
I guess Prince did it because I know he had issues with like his hips and stuff. I think he had a hip replacement surgery because from dancing for so many years, like the wear and tear on it.
Yeah, it started that. And then, you know, these companies one of them just had the big settlement, the Purdue Pharma. They paid out all this money because they were just drug dealers. They were heroin dealers for years, and it was legal. And then people moved on to fentanyl because the opioids, the oxy, wasn't enough. And it's
so fentanyl is stronger than oxy.
Yeah, I mean,
so that's crazy. So that's like, I mean, I don't know what happened, but it sounds like it probably just was like they were doing cocaine. I don't know if they were doing it on purpose, but the fact that like four people would OD at a party, I mean, God,
the fact that they OD'd shows you that they didn't know that fentanyl was in there, because if they did. My feeling is like they're like, they throw his regular cokes, they're just snorting away, you know, and then the effects will hit you. I think probably the heroin thing won't affect you immediately. I don't know, but
imagine having a party and three people die at the party. I mean, it's like a lot of people to die at a party.
Yeah, that's like usually two more than I usually see at a party.
Right. I mean, one is like a huge
that's normal
thing, but like three, like. Oh,
yeah.
I don't think I'm going to go to his next party. That's what you get when you go to a party at Dr. Feelgood's. No, like, who was throwing that party?
I don't know. Sounds like a real LA party, you know?
Yeah.
But it's sad. I mean, yeah, I do know that girl. Hopefully she comes out okay. I don't know the other ones, but.
Yeah, I saw the names and I didn't recognize. I mean, I think they're like, you know, they're LA-based comics, and there's so many comics now, you just not know.
Yeah. I mean, that happens. Well, years ago, I took a Molly or ecstasy or whatever, and I stopped for years after that because it was laced with something. It was
really?
Not. Yeah, I was not normal after that. The thing is that it's kind of like, it's in a pill form, so it's not really like, I guess, concentrated, so it just kind of hit me slowly over the night.
What felt off about it?
Just everything. It didn't feel like Molly. It just felt like this horrible. I was like fucked up in the wrong way, and it lasted forever, and I was ill, and it was definitely, I don't know if it was heroin or whatever, but it was laced with something, you know?
Wow.
And it happens once in a while. It's fucking scary.
Yeah. That's like what terrifies me about, like, that always terrified me about drugs. Like, I never really did anything beyond smoking pot. Cause, like that, that kind of stuff. I would hear, you know, I would hear stories really young about, like, you know, things being laced with like bug spray or Clorox, and
yeah. Well, you'd hear about that with weed too. That's how they used to try to scare people from doing weed, weed. They go, oh yeah, weed's not bad, but it's usually laced with you know, angel dust or some bullshit. But now that weed's legal, that's not going to be a problem anymore.
Right, right. Yeah, I guess I heard that with weed. Yeah, I mean, I didn't, you know, I was even young. I was scared off of that pretty well. I would, Yeah, it was kind of like a wuss. Yeah, I mean, I just young. I bought into all the scare tactics they used.
Right. Yeah, and but when you legalize things, these aren't really problems because you have to go through FDA approval or
I bought into it, and then when I turned 22, I was like, you know what? I'm pretty stressed out, so let's just try this. No, when you're a kid, you're just kind of like especially us, the 80s, they were like, a hardcore campaign to scare kids off drugs. But it was weird that people still would, I don't know, I can't believe people still like try crack,
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Well, the thing I think with fentanyl also is that apparently when you do heroin, it's the first time you do it, it's the greatest experience of your life. And after that, you're just chasing that feeling. You'll never duplicate that feeling, but you do heroin to get close to that feeling. So I feel like with fentanyl, it's heavy duty. So it's like, I think they think they can replicate that feeling.
Yeah, it sounds a lot like stand-up.
Yeah.
Because you'll have a really good show and then like you're chasing that for the rest of your time doing it.
But I guess the first time I ever performed on stage, I had a great set, I think. So I was kind of chasing that for a while and I didn't duplicate that for years.
I think I did okay, but I think it was... early on, I had a really good set, and then you just keep going, and then you'll have a really good set. And I did a show last night; it was a really good crowd. I was kinda, shocked.
Well, you need that, but I think early on, though, you need that because it's like,
yeah, or else you just stop. The one time I had a really good set, I was going to stop, like when I was going to do the show, I was like, yeah, this is it. I'm not going to do it anymore. And then I had a really good set and then it just kept me going.
Yeah, that's what it does. That's what it does. All right. I think our guest is here. You want to, I'll bring him in.
Sure. Yeah. Do you want to, let me introduce him real quick. Okay. So, I mentioned him before. We have a guest.
He's not in yet. So we got to banter until he's in the room.
Banter. Hey.
There he is.
I'm here. Let me see if I can figure out how to get my camera going.
Okay. Hey. Wow.
Hey.
Damn.
That is cool. Wow.
How you doing?
All right.
Very good. Very good.
Thanks for being here. So our guest is here. He's, as I mentioned before, he's the founder of the hugely successful celebrity gossip website Media Takeout. Focuses mainly on African-American celebrities. Everybody, please, I hope I say this right, please welcome Fred Mwanga Gahanga. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. That's me.
Wow. See, that's research. Yeah.
I know.
And that's at the first take too. That's pretty good, right?
Yeah, I did do research. I listened to people saying it in an interview. So, cause I hate it when people get my name wrong. So, and I'm sure you're used to people getting it wrong. So I didn't want to.
It's really not a big deal. I mean, it was a big deal when I was younger and people were saying it in kind of mean ways, but as I'm older, I kind of got used to it.
Yeah.
Do you know how many letters are in your last name?
It's 13 and it's exactly the same number of letters that are in the name Schwarzenegger too. That's another thing. That I used to
Well, that's not so bad then.
No.
Yeah.
How many? So that's four syllables, right? Schwarzenegger. Okay. So thanks a lot for being here. We're like huge pop culture fans. I'm a huge pop culture gossip fan and Media Takeout. So you first founded this in 2006, is that right?
Yeah. So we started the company in 2006. At the time, blogs were just kind of bubbling up. Perez Hilton was pretty big at the time. TMZ was just coming out. So it was kind of the golden age of blogs and we kind of got in on the earliest of the trend.
Did you and what motivated you to go that route to start a blog that focused on like celebrity gossip? Was that something you were always interested in?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was always interested in celebrity gossip. I didn't quite know it because the celebrity gossip that I was most interested in was, who was going to get traded to the Knicks or, who was going to be the starting quarterback on the Giants. Right. Which is gossip. It's celebrity. But it all kind of falls under the kind of celebrity gossip world. now it's kind of weird because gossip and news is kind of so intertwined that it's harder to see it now. But at the time when we were kind of coming out with it, there was a clear delineation between gossip and news. And I just thought the gossip was a little bit more interesting.
And when you, so did you specifically start with the intent that you were going to focus on Black celebrity gossip?
Yeah. Yeah. I think at the time there was, you know, there was a lot of kind of niche gossip sites. There were like car blogs coming up. There was urban sites about hip hop music and different genres of music. And I figured, you know, in the gossip world, it kind of made sense to break celebrities down too, because a lot of times, at least then, a large number of African-American celebrities just weren't being covered in the mainstream blogs. So a lot of, if you were going to see, you know, stories on Beyonce and, you know, Gabrielle Union and some of the bigger actresses and Halle Berry, at the time you were going to find them more likely on urban blogs like Media Takeout and not on the mainstream sites. The mainstream sites just didn't find them as interesting. That was then, obviously things have changed a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And what was, so the thing I'm most curious about is, so how do you start that? I know you have that idea and you get the domain and you set up the blog, but like, how do you go about getting a story, especially at the beginning?
That was the interesting part. So in the beginning, we didn't even know that we would ever be able to come up with a story. The problem was at the time, and you have to remember, you know, and it's hard, I think, to think back to then, but when you think about it, it was all news was either given through a radio station or a magazine or a TV show. That's basically how you got urban news, your urban celebrity news. There wasn't very much online. And so the radio stations weren't really able to gossip about celebrities because they needed the celebrities to come on and do interviews for radio. TV shows could never really gossip about the celebrities because they needed them to show up to their awards shows for the ratings. And the magazines could never really gossip about the celebrities because they needed them to show up and to be on the magazine covers to push sales.
Right.
So it wasn't that there was every one of these places, if you went to any radio station, any magazine or any TV station, there was tons of gossip there. They were oozing gossip. There was really just no place to put it because the traditional places just wouldn't allow it to ever hit the air. So when the internet came up and we came out there, it wasn't so much of, you know, where do you find it? It was coming to us. You know, people were saying, oh my God, I heard this. I saw this. I can't write this. I can't talk about this on my show. But here, this got to go out. Here, Media Takeout, you guys put it out. And so that's how we got a lot of our early stories.
Because I do remember, I think it was like Us Magazine. They did a lot of things in magazines where they would have gossip, but they wouldn't say who it was. It was like a riddle. Like they'd be like, this guy
a blind item, but
blind item. Yeah.
But yeah, that was like, cause I guess they couldn't outright say it. Cause then the person, they'd be in trouble.
A lot of times there's a lot of like a symbiotic relationship too. So sometimes you may have just gotten off the phone and got the best tip in the world from someone. And then the next day you get a really juicy gossip piece about them. And you're like, I can't really just run a juicy gossip piece about somebody who really helped me out the day before. So a lot of times, you know, there's a lot of like behind the scenes stuff that a lot of, you know, the readers, listeners, they don't really know that really goes on. So a lot of times when you see those blind items, that's exactly what it might be. They might say, well, we have this thing, we want to put it out there, but we can't because of whatever agreement that we cut with this person, or the person just helped us out or something like that.
Yeah, or maybe some of the stuff is too hot. Because I remember for years, I think the New York Post, Page Six, they would have referred to like Anderson Cooper before he came out, and they would never say his name. When he came out, everyone realized who they were talking about.
There were always stuff like that. But I also think too, especially when you're talking about, you know, outing people, there's a big kind of stigma associated with that. Right. One, particularly for someone like Anderson Cooper, who I'm not sure that he was ever truly in the closet. I think he just wouldn't discuss his personal life. So, you know, outing him is not really outing someone that's living an active, open life, right? So I think there was that in there, and they didn't really want to get kind of caught up in it. But I think, you know, stuff like that. I know one of the big kind of blind item stories that was always popping up was Charlie Sheen and his HIV diagnosis.
Oh, yeah.
And that was constantly showing up, and people were just constantly hinting around the idea. There was a lot of buzz, but no one really wanted to put that out there. I mean, that's the kind of story that you could never really confirm, because how do you confirm someone's medical records, right? That's HIPAA violation.
Is that something that you could get sued for?
If you're wrong, yeah. I mean, but yeah. So I think that's part of it. But more so is you wouldn't report it unless you were 100, unless you knew for a fact that it's true. Someone's saying something isn't enough for you to go out there and put it on online. You know,
so there
you
were
want to see actual evidence.
So there were like that was kind of circling for a while before it he came out with it.
Yeah, yeah, that rumor was going around. I'd heard it. I'd seen it in a couple of blind items that were pretty obviously talking about it. But I guess because no one actually had confirmation, final confirmation, no one published the story until the National Enquirer did many years later.
And also now, do people specifically maybe come to you because they want you to print something about them just to kind of get attention?
All the time. If I wanted to, I could have like a list of celebrity friends and a mile long, you know. They always, every time I see people, they're like, hey, how's it going? And then, hey, could you figure out a way to get me a media takeout? I got a new album coming out. I got some new project. I really want it to be pushed. So people always want to do it, and they're willing to kind of tell you. Sometimes they'll tell you stuff about someone else in the industry and say, hey, if I give you this, will you put me on? The answer to that question is usually yes, of course. You know, yeah. But yeah, that's always there. And it's another misconception. A lot of times people will say, oh, you know, do you have like bad relationships with celebrities? I mean, I can tell you that there are very, very few celebrities that I don't have a really good relationship with.
Oh, that's good.
You know? Yeah. It's because, like I said, I mean, it's a weird relationship, right? Like even if you're writing something that may not be flattering about them this week, 2 weeks later, when they have a movie to produce, to promote, and you're helping them with that, they're your best friend. So it's always kind of a, you know, they're never really too much of your friend, but they're never really too much of your enemy, even no matter what you publish.
Have you had any interactions with any where celebrities have gotten angry with you? I'm sure there's been
sometimes, you know, but I gotta say, it really is rare. It's rare. And I see celebrities all the time. I mean, I live in New York, I'm out. So I see them, and it's very, very rare that anything other than a positive.
And is it because now they know you and they kind of know like, oh, I have to like be nice to this guy because he can kind of like put something good or bad out?
It's not really that. I think we've come a long way in the blog world where we're not out there actively looking to like, you know, go after a person, a certain celebrity, and constantly report negative news about them. You know, sometimes you do something and screws up, there's negative news about you, you know, and we're going to report it, and a lot of other people are going to report it. But the majority of the news, no matter who you are as a celebrity, is going to be positive coming from us. I think most of the celebrities get that. And on the off chance, there was one time. Should I tell it? All right,
you should definitely tell it. Okay.
Don't pull back now.
So it was we broke a huge story that Alicia Keys was dating Swiss Beatz. Now, obviously, they're married, they have kids, they have a happy life, family, everything. But at the time, Swiss Beatz was not quite divorced his wife. And so we broke that story. And so I'm out in the club that night, and I run into Swiss Beatz. And I'm like, holy shit. And he's there with like all his friends. And I'm thinking, oh my God. But I'm not sure if he didn't know me. I think he did because my friend like introduced me, and I was like, do not say that's right for me to take it. But he did. And Swiss Beatz just kind of said, hey, what's up? And just kind of kept it going. Maybe he didn't hear. He probably didn't hear, you know, I would think. But that was the one time that I was like, wow, because it was just so fresh and it was so scandalous, that story and the way that it hit. I can't imagine that night would have ended well with me.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Really?
Yeah.
I have a question. So we have a friend. I think it might be a mutual friend, Adam Glenn. Do you know Adam?
I know a ton of Adams. Glenn,
okay. Anyway, he works in that business, and he's very good at spotting celebrities, because a lot of celebrities, they try to not look like celebrities when they're walking down the street. He has a very good skill at doing that. Would you say you have that skill? I think you need that in that business.
Yeah, because what a lot of people don't realize is, every day I'm looking at hundreds of photographs, paparazzi photos. We're looking at celebrities up close. We're looking at them from afar. We're looking at them at different angles. Like, I have a very detailed understanding of what every celebrity really looks like, more so than most people that maybe they just see them on a, you know, on a a couple of internet, maybe on Instagram a couple of times, mm-hmm. a couple of magazines, maybe, or, you know, in a movie. I've looked at every celebrity, you know, hundreds of pictures of every celebrity from all different angles and all different ways, with makeup, without makeup, mm-hmm. you know, with the hair long, with the hair short, with the wig on, with the wig off. I've seen them all. So usually I can spot a celebrity very, very quickly.
Who do you think is a male or female best looking celebrity in person that you get jumps out at you, that maybe they don't need makeup or that type of thing?
I would probably say Ciara. Like, Ciara is a very beautiful woman when you see her on, but she in person, one, she's a lot taller and a lot kind of more stately than you'd think. Mm-hmm. And she just really is. I remember that was the one thing when I saw her, I said, wow, she's as great as she looks. That woman is actually better looking in person than wow. she is.
What about the opposite? Have you ever seen someone and been like, oh my God, like they look so amazing. And then in person, cause I've seen that a lot. I know that's kind of like a common.
Yeah.
Thing. I don't think he's going to answer that question.
The reason why I'm not going to answer that question, because sometimes people just have bad days. And so I don't know, maybe I just caught you on a bad day. There was one woman that I saw, but it looked like it was like early in the morning, and she was wearing like clothes from the night before. So maybe she like hooked up with some guy, and I just saw her like after that.
Oh,
and she looked awful. And I remember thinking like, oh my God, I can't believe how terrible this woman looks. But I'm not going to say, because like I said, I'm assuming that was a bad day for her. You know, if she gets herself together, she'll look great.
Can you remember the first story that you broke that like maybe kind of like was your biggest story that kind of you felt like maybe took Media Takeout to like a different level? Can you remember, was there one specifically?
There were so many that happened. There was like, you know, I can't remember the first, but I do remember like the first one that I was like, wow, we just broke something big. And that was when Chris Brown assaulted Rihanna.
Ooh,
what year was that?
Geez, that's a huge story.
Yeah, that was, it was a long time ago.
It's like 2008 or something like that.
Something like that. But to go back to kind of what I was saying before, when Chris Brown did that to Rihanna, it was no secret, right? Like, the person that told us about it was like one of like 50 people that knew that it happened, right? So it wasn't, there was no secret. The people at MTV knew. They were trying at the time to put makeup on Rihanna's face and trying to get her to come out, because they knew that she was coming out. So there was absolutely no secret about it. But like I said, there just was this entire like culture of not talking about stuff, bad things about celebrities at the time, that just was going to allow that to happen. And had we not broken the story, and then eventually TMZ jumped on the story later, I don't believe that story would have ever come out. I think you would have
really?
Just seen.
And were you guys the ones that broke it?
Yeah,
we broke the story. And then after we broke the story, TMZ got on it, and then everybody else jumped on it. And then it just kind of spiraled. But remember, it happened the night before the Grammys, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it was at the, so no one was arrested, right? Like, it happened the night before the Grammys. Now we're at the Grammys. So this is, you know, whatever, 12 hours after that happened. And people were just wondering, is Rihanna, she was supposed to perform that day. People were wondering, is Rihanna going to perform? She obviously couldn't, because her face was destroyed, right?
Wow, I didn't even know it was that bad.
Yeah, I mean, the pictures are there. She was beaten up. She was bruised. I mean, maybe they could have done something with Hollywood makeup. I don't know. But she probably, just physically, mentally, she probably wasn't in a good place you know, get out there and get on stage. But yeah, so it was already 12 hours had passed, and they had basically gotten to the point where they were already walking red carpet. People were arriving on the red carpets when we broke the story. So they could have just gotten, had they gotten to the other end of the Grammys, Rihanna, let's assume that she didn't come out and say anything, which she didn't for a long period of time. Chris Brown clearly didn't say anything. That entire story would have gone away. Remember, wow. There was nothing really there. But obviously it didn't. We broke it, then TMZ jumped on it. And I think once both of us were on it, there was no way to hide it anymore.
So had you guys, you said it was kind of like rumored and kind of known around before that. So was that like a tough decision you had to make to decide to do that? Or
it wasn't a tough decision whether or not to put it out. It was tough to confirm that it was in fact true, right? Yeah. Because when you hear something like that, that's just so outrageous of a claim, you're like, what? Like, these are the two biggest stars in the world, they're like one of the most loved couples in the world. Remember Chris Brown before that? I mean, we're thinking of Chris Brown now, tattoos, and, you know, Chris Brown wasn't that. He was like boy band. He was like Justin Bieberish kind of Chris Brown. So to think that he's doing that, it was outside of the realm of possibility for most people. It was something that was completely unbelievable. And it took us a while to kind of get to the point. We had heard the rumors. We were like, you know, is this true? And then I think what got us to the point is when the people over that were running the award show told us, no, Rihanna is not performing. And that it's because her face was badly bruised. That kind of put it all together. We knew it was what it was. And then we went with the story.
How do you... Oh, go ahead. Do you have
I just want to ask a question. Because I think, I don't know, now with like cancel culture and stuff like that, I feel like back then they would maybe try to protect celebrities a little bit more. Do you think now, where because of cancel culture, I don't know, that maybe that protection is not there as much, and maybe they want people, you know, places like, or people like you to kind of out people more about the bad things they're doing?
Well, I think there's, you know, cancel culture is something that the public does, right? So if the public finds out about these things, then the person will get canceled. But remember, Chris, when the public found out what Chris Brown did, they in fact canceled him too.
Yeah.
Rightfully so, right? So I don't know that there's that much of a difference then. I think that the bigger issue is whether or not people in the entertainment industry will enable bad behavior. And that is something that is, I mean, it's one thing, especially me. I went to business school, law school. I worked on Wall Street. I worked in law firms. I worked in professional environments. And then I went in entertainment, and I was truly shocked the way that these companies run, the way that people talk to each other, the way that men talk to women. I was just like, how can you? This just doesn't seem real that you could do this in the 21st century. You could be operating and running businesses and entire industries like this. But that's just the way it is. That's just the way the entertainment industry is. And it's largely because if you're Microsoft, if you're running a company like Microsoft, or let's say you're running Amazon or Facebook, right? Like Facebook has Mark Zuckerberg. Obviously, he's a big part of Facebook. But if Mark Zuckerberg died tomorrow, Facebook would continue on. Everybody would have their job. You know, the company would continue going. So while he's a very, very important part of Facebook, he is not Facebook. Right. Like Facebook is something completely different from him. And so Mark Zuckerberg can get fired from Facebook and Facebook will continue on. Entertainment doesn't work that, right? Like if you are Chris Brown, you are the business, right? Like there is an entire business built around Chris Brown. And so just like the employees of Facebook will try to protect the company Facebook, not necessarily Mark Zuckerberg, employees of Chris Brown, they have an intense incentive to protect Chris Brown, the brand, the company that I'm going to be working for. But it's a fact that the person and the company are kind of the same. So because of that, you just have these weird, perverse conflicts. And because of that, if you have someone that is an entertainer, a powerful entertainer, and they have a horrible workplace, it just goes on and everybody just accepts it in ways that in no other company and no other industry would it ever be allowed.
So that must be, I guess that's kind of why everything like went so haywire with entertainment, because it was going on for so long and then no one would talk about it. I guess the culture of it and then behind the scenes. And then finally, when like the dam started to break a little bit, it just kind of like flooded out because like, I didn't realize that like, but you said you experienced that when you would be in that industry, like as opposed to like in finance or law, you said like just the way you mean like the way they around the offices talk to each other was kind of like just very inappropriate and sexual.
Yeah,
and stuff.
You'd find like inappropriate, like clear, something that I would consider clear sexual harassment, like openly done in radio stations all throughout the
and no one can say anything because it's just
no
so
one. It's just the culture. It was, like I said, it was shocking. It was so shocking to me. I would sometimes talk to them on the phone and I'd be like, is this how it is? Because I was just so outside of it, right? Like most of these people, they came up in it, right? Like they interned and then they worked in different radio stations or, you know, TV stations or wherever it is, or record labels, and you just kind of moved on. And so that's your like frame of reference of what a business is. It is a business. Whereas I'm coming from something completely different where people actually respected their colleagues and didn't sexually harass them. And so when I'm coming in and I'm seeing it, I'm kind of like, you know, just it really was startling and shocking to me. I will say it's getting better, but it's still nothing compared to what it is. And every once in a while you hear things that come out, right? Like you hear about some of the bullying that was going on behind the scenes in the Ellen DeGeneres show, right? And the public is shocked and they're like, oh my God, I can't believe that it's there. I'm thinking like, I've seen that stuff all over.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even, you know, I can't say anything specific about Ellen because I just don't know. But I mean, the kind of behavior that they're talking about that Ellen was doing, that is so common out there. And the type of things that they're saying that they did, that's just like, I'm just like, really? That's just the way that a lot of people just are in the industry.
Why do you think that is? Just because it's just for so long, it was just embedded that it was, because I think that's true. Like, if you work in, you know, non-entertainment, like if you work in like law, it's very like paying your dues is like they're going to work you to death your first like few years. But in entertainment, it does seem like there's kind of it's just kind of implied and accepted, like, well, you're going to have to like be treated like shit, because that's always kind of the thing you hear about, like the personal assistants, where the whole thing is like they're going to just abuse you and treat you like complete shit and sexually harass you. And it's like, well, that's what you got to do. So
right. Like I said, I don't know. I wish I knew. I can just say that, like, for me, it was startling kind of just seeing it. It's there. It's everywhere you look. Like, it's so pervasive in the industry that you can't even say it. I'd like to say it's just sexual harassment, but sometimes it's just, like, severe bullying. Sometimes it's you know, just toxic behavior that's around there. I'm not sure exactly where it's from. But.
And then people, I mean, I think everyone, like, the Harvey Weinstein thing was kind of like, people kind of knew about him for years, but I guess they couldn't really get anything on him, but I think people kind of knew about it for a while, didn't they? Or
yeah, that's.
Oh yeah, that was it. Wasn't even an open secret. I mean, everyone knew that what Harvey Weinstein, what kind of person he was, what he expected out of women, and so, you know, as everything's coming out, you're finding out more and more about him and just how horrible of a human being he was. And part of that is it's important to have these. Stories about people, right? And sometimes it's a small embarrassing story, and if it's just that, it usually just ends up being that, and people go on. But a lot of times, you know, part of the reason why Harvey Weinstein was able to get away with it as much as he did is because there were dozens of small stories like that, but no one was able to kind of stitch them all together, right? Like, if you knew every one of these women would have come out, and let's say Harvey Weinstein would have said this person's lying, fine. But then you get to two, you get to three, you get to four, you get to five, you get to six, you get to seven, and then you really start creating an outburst or a level of outrage from the public that just starts asking more questions and starts saying or wanting a better answer from people like Harvey Weinstein than this woman is lying for me, right? Like, you know, after the first one, okay, by the time we're at woman number 5, 6, 10, 15, we want a better answer than that. We don't want to just hear that. And that's part of, you know, in a broader scale, why I think it really is important for us all to just kind of engage in this kind of gossip.
I have a question. So there's a lot of gossip you'll hear that like is very kind of like out there, and it seems like everyone's kind of knows about it, but it's never like officially released. There's a lot of gossip about, you know, huge celebrities being closeted. But you hear about it all the time, but you never officially hear about it. Is that just rumors that aren't true, or is it just people won't let it cut? Because I mean, for years, the Tom Cruise, you know, being closeted thing has just been around, but it's never been like corroborated or really come out. Or John Travolta was like another one that you always heard about. Is that a thing that within the gossip community, it's just kind of agreed that you won't talk about specific, like, how did those things get out there but not officially get out there?
Okay, I think that part of it, and I can't say specifically whether I know anything about John Travolta or Tom Cruise, because I don't, but I've heard those rumors too. And I think part of the reason why it's hard to report a story like that is, if you think about it, like, what is this story? If you're trying, you know, if this was 1975, the story would be, oh, we saw John Travolta with a man, let's say that happened, that he's gay, right? But that's not, you know, with today's sensibilities, that's not necessarily true, right? Like, okay, just because he's with a man doesn't necessarily make
right.
Gay. Maybe he's bisexual. Maybe he's bicurious. Maybe he's queer. Maybe he's straight and just wanted to be with a man. So you find yourself kind of caught in this weird, like, what's the purpose of writing the story kind of thing?
Yeah.
You know, because it's not like, like I said, if this was 1975, this story would be, hey, we caught John Travolta with a man. He's gay. In 2021, that's not really the type of story that you can tell.
Right.
And then because it doesn't necessarily mean that. And then, you know, are you saying that he's cheating on his wife? Well, maybe they have an arrangement. Like all of the things that would have made that story so scandalous 25 years ago just makes it a lot less relevant today. And so, you know, whereas there were these rumors bubbling before, because maybe they were trying to look to try and find it, the people that have found enough about it to kind of confirm those pieces, because of the way that kind of the world has changed, no longer have a story to kind of tell, even with those confirmed pieces.
You know? Not really much of a story anymore. I mean, you think about it.
Yeah, I guess I'd heard about it for over 20 years, and it's just kind of like, I don't know.
I think the only thing that makes it a story is that they never admit that they are. So that's what I guess keeps the story going. But it's really, I don't think if it came out, I don't think people were really.
But like I said, it's almost like the Anderson Cooper thing, right? Like, are they really denying any of this stuff, or are they just not talking about it and they're doing whatever it is that they're doing, and the people that they know them know exactly what they're doing? And, you know, it's almost one of those things. Like, if you're outing or over Queen Latifah, people are like, we're going to out Queen Latifah. Queen Latifah was living the life of an openly gay woman for basically her whole adult life, right? Yeah. So there was nothing really to out. She had girlfriends. People would know, you know, she would invite her girlfriend out. She would, you know, she would bring her girlfriends around. So this wasn't a thing. And so it was kind of like there was all these rumors like, hey, who's going to out Queen Latifah? And then the whole story just kind of disappeared as kind of the cultural shift changed.
Yeah.
And the idea of outing people is no longer even that scandalous of a thing anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got a question. So we were talking about before you jumped on, if you have any info, that'd be great. But, you know, Michael K. Williams, because I was a big fan of his work. Do you know any more than what they're saying right now, or probably not?
Yeah. So we started looking into it. So I knew Michael K. Williams, I think he was a really good guy. And so I think he deserves a full kind of investigation into what it is that happened to him. And I can tell you that there are members of his family that want that too. They don't want this narrative to just be, oh, he overdosed, another overdose, and, you know, that's it. So I want to be, we're definitely looking into it. I think that there's a lot of stuff in there that makes me say that there may be more to this story as the days go by. Yeah. And it's unfortunate, you know, because, and I think a lot of times, and, you know, sometimes we get pushback from people. People are saying, well, why are you digging into it? Why don't you just like kind of let sleeping dogs lie? You know, obviously something bad happened to him. You know, he had his demons. Let's just kind of let the man rest. And that's what I think a lot of people think. But if there was something that happened to him, if there was some foul play involved, if there is someone that may have been at least part responsible for what happened to him, I think we owe it to him to continue on this, to investigate and figure out exactly what it was that happened, figure out exactly who was involved, whether anyone was involved, whether anyone was with him the night that he passed on, who he was spending his time with. And we're looking into all of this stuff, and, you know, I'm not sure that anything's going to come out of this. There may be nothing more than what's out there, but I can tell you that we're definitely looking into it, and there's definitely enough there to get me very suspicious.
Oh, really? Wow. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I was going to ask, so you might have answered already with the Rihanna and Chris Brown thing, but is there a story that when you discovered it, that like, what's the most shocking story that like you came across that you were just like, you couldn't even believe it? It was like just a huge revelation that almost like blew your mind.
There is one that definitely sticks out. So it was when NBA player Gilbert Arenas pulled out a gun and threatened his teammate. The day after that happened, someone that was in the locker room, who I actually know, called me and told me that it happened. And I was like, there is no way that's possible. Like, an NBA player pulled a gun on another NBA player in the locker room and threatened to shoot him? Sounded outrageous. So we kind of went into it. It was early on when we were at Media Takeout. So we were just nervous about the idea of putting out a story like this, right? The NBA is a very powerful organization. These are, you know, both men are millionaires, right? Like, you don't want to go putting out that kind of stuff, and it could affect their brands and deals. So we kind of, I was so nervous about it. I was so confident that it happened because, like I said, the person that I know personally was in the room and saw it, and I'm confident that they were telling me the truth. So what we did is I kind of wimped out. Instead of going out and just reporting it like it should have been, I kind of cloaked it. So we wrote the story something like an NBA player, two NBA players were fighting, and security was worried that a gun might have been around or something like that. You know what I mean? Just watering down the story so that it would kind of get out there, but the NBA wouldn't come after us. The NBA actually did come after us on that story. And they released, the NBA the next day released a press release basically saying Media Takeout stories have been a bunch of lies. Nothing ever happened. There was no gun, no security, no whatever. Obviously, everything that we wrote was true. It was even worse than what we wrote. But they tried to bury it because they didn't want any other news agency to kind of jump on it.
Yeah.
And it took a couple of weeks, but the New York Post, which is the local New York paper, celebrity and sports journalism in New York, they got the full story with everything, all the details, and they published it, put it out. Just like we would have. They basically put out the story that we would have published if I wouldn't have been such a...
Right.
But it came out. It was good. It was big. It's one of the big regrets that I have that we didn't break that big story. But you know, the one thing that I've learned being in this business for 16 years, there is not a single story that will make you, and there's not a single story that will break you. So if there's a story and it looks like the best story in the world, I'm very well okay just saying, take it. Somebody else take this, you know, because you're not doing this for one story. You're doing this for, this is right. about a career.
But aren't you ever worried, like, I guess what happened to Gawker? I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Right.
Didn't they get sued? And, you know, like, if you...
Was that the Hulk Hogan?
Then? Right.
Yeah.
Aren't you worried about stuff like that?
The thing about Gawker, and you know, I know Nick Denton too. He's the guy who ran Gawker. Nick was a notorious... And I'm sure he'll be open about and tell you about this. He was a notorious asshole. I mean, he would, not only would he like write a story about you, he would then troll you from Gawker for years over the story that he wrote about you. So he would put people in positions where they would have no choice but to like rain like hell fury on them. And he was just, he would take that as like kind of like a joke. And so, you know, part of the reason why what happened with Hulk Hogan is it wasn't even really about Hulk Hogan, right? Like, it did what he did about Hulk Hogan. It would have all gone away. But he had been basically trolling this billionaire, Peter Thiel, for years, just trying to... Peter Thiel, another man who lives his open life, right? Like, he's not hiding his personal life at all. But Nick Denton, who is openly gay, was constantly just trying to push him and poke at him and try and force him to be openly, to force him out of the closet and talk about his love affairs and stuff like that. And Peter Thiel, I think initially was trying to be nice and say, okay, you know, Gawker, you had fun. This is enough. Leave me alone. And Nick and Gawker just would continue and went on. And this went on for years. They were going after Peter Thiel. And at some point, Peter Thiel was just like, I've had enough.
And he's got a lot of money too, right?
And he's got a lot of money. He's got a lot of money, right? Obviously, he's a billionaire. And so he was like, I've had enough. And so when he saw the Hulk Hogan thing, he kind of jumped on it and the two of them kind of teamed up and tag teamed Gawker out of existence. But like I said, I mean, I think it was, you know, obviously Gawker made a big mistake in what they published. But I think the bigger mistake and the bigger lesson to learn is what he was doing to people. He would almost, it was almost like fun for him, right? Like I remember like I would talk to him and he'd be like, you know, he'd be talking about sued. He'd be like, oh, I haven't gotten sued this week. You know, he thought it was a joke. He thought it was all fun and games. And, you know, it came back to bite him.
Can I, so when the whole Me Too movement started, first of all, how did that, I don't know how to ask it. So basically, like, some of those stories, like story after story started coming out. What was your view of, like, because do you remember when, like, the Weinstein one would come out and that was clearly like a lot of wrongdoing, but then they progressively, some of them weren't maybe on the same level as the Weinstein one. What was your opinion of that? Because it seemed like the Aziz Ansari story was the one that kind of like shifted things a little bit. Do you agree with that, that it kind of got a little out of where it was like the stories kept coming and some of them were being kind of lumped in with Weinstein that weren't on the same level?
Yeah, it's hard to say. It's hard for me specifically to say, to talk about this, because on one hand, I have nothing but sympathy for woman, man, whoever that's gone through, you know, harassment, abuse, sexual or otherwise. So I think that there has to be a place for victims to have a voice. So I think that there is that. That's one really important thing. But then there's standards of journalism, right? Like, what does a story look like? What do you need in order to have enough information to actually publish a story, to actually publish an allegation? And it almost seems like at some point, all standards just dropped. Like, anybody that just comes out and says something, you can literally put it out. And you know, I think even in that Harvey Weinstein, it was a piece by, Ronan Farrow.
Yeah, Ronan, mm-hmm.
He wrote that piece, and I remember reading that piece, and I'm thinking, and he was angry. He was like talking about how he tried to get it through NBC, and it never went. And he went to the New Yorker or whatever and published it. And anyone that's not in media looks at that story and says, oh my God, NBC was trying to hide and protect Harvey Weinstein from it. Anyone that has ever worked in a newsroom knows that what he published right there would never be published in any newsroom in America. Other than the New Yorker, that day, there is not a newsroom in America that would publish that. You cannot just put unsubstantiated allegation over after unsubstantiated allegation that are completely unconfirmed other than by the person. And basically saying, okay, the person seems credible. Or yeah, the person did meet Harvey Weinstein and they're saying this. And so I'm going to put this in, you know, in a newspaper. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, that's just not the way journalism works. And he knows better than that. And that's the thing. He knows better than that. The public doesn't know. The public is like, well, maybe the women are telling the truth. Why can't they have a voice? Which is right. But that's just not the way it is. I mean, that's you know, the same reason why people are coming after, you know, the National Enquirer or some other places, right? That it's not just having a voice. It's we have to be confident. We as the editors, we as the media, and eventually the public, that the person that's coming out and saying this is saying this because it's in fact true and not saying it because maybe they manufactured it. Maybe they have some ulterior motive to bring this up. Maybe it's delusional. Maybe it's whatever. And you know, and I know that a lot of people listening to this are going to say, you know, but yeah, how often does it happen? I can tell you as a person that is in this business, that the vast, 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 vast majority of people that come to you with a story are full of it. It's not true.
Wow.
They have an agenda. They have it. And once you start looking, you find it. And you go, okay, all right, well, you can't do it. And so the reason why, like I said, it would never fly in any newsroom in America is because they all know what I know, that a lot of people just come up to you with other stuff. And the only way that you could be confident that they're telling the truth, the only way, is to have a way to independently corroborate what it is that they're saying. You cannot just allow people to speak, let it go, and not expect the people to come out and tell you stuff that is just inherently not true. We know this because we know this through experience. The public doesn't know it. Like I said, and I'm not in any way saying that what Harvey Weinstein did is right. I'm not in any way saying that what these women are saying there is untrue. I don't know. I haven't looked at it. What I'm saying is you cannot just allow people to just come forward with unsubstantiated or uncorroborated allegations and just push it onto someone and just assume that it's true. That's just not the way that.
So, and that's kind of what started to happen, right? Like one person would come forward. It, like the Aziz Ansari was basically a woman was like, "This is what happened," and then it was like, "Okay, here you go." That's and that was the end of it. So, how do you go about corroborating something like that? You just have to have another person who can back up what happened.
Well, it depends on the story, right? Like, so if someone will say, you know, I was with Harvey Weinstein at, you know, at the Waldorf Astoria in September of 2020, right? Like the first thing you do is say, okay, well, September 20, 2020, where was Harvey Weinstein? And then you say, well, you know, there's an article that's saying that he spent September of 2020 in the south of France with his wife and family, right? Then, okay. You know, it didn't happen, right? Like, so you want to just try and find any piece of the story. You're looking to find anything that is conflicted. And then if you don't have the conflicts, then you say, okay, well, there's nothing that's like is making us throw the story away. Now let's see if we could figure something else out. Maybe you call up Harvey Weinstein, say, or his people and say, you know, what happened on this? Or you find that there's another person saying it or whatever else. Like there's, you just have to do it. And if you can't, and it just comes down to he said, she said thing, then maybe it just ends up as a blind item. It ends up as stuff that people are whispering about, and it just never can make it into.
And do you think that's what happened with the Me Too? Like a lot of those stories should have just been blind items, but they instead became, because there were a lot of stories that came out at that point that like were on like mainstream media, and then they just went away. A lot of these Me Too stories that.
Yeah. I mean, some of them are, you know, like, especially with Bill Cosby and Russell Simmons. I mean, not saying that these people are saints. Obviously, you know, they've done a lot of terrible things. But if you read some of those allegations, some of them were so obviously false. Like some of them were so obviously blatantly false that you wonder why those even get published, right? Like you're almost doing a disservice to women, to the women that have claims that seem a lot more plausible. When you put some report from some woman 35 years ago making outlandish claims that are so fantastical that they are completely unbelievable, and you put them all together in a thing and in the soup, and then when a person reads it and they start saying, okay, well, this sounds good, and then they see this and they're like, oh my God, look at this. Yeah. Oh, they're all this.
Yeah, if one's untrue, they're all untrue. Yeah.
So, you know, and I think that's where we were getting to. We were getting to that point, and it's almost like, you know, even with Deshaun Watson, right? Like you hear, okay, a woman comes out and then all of a sudden 20 and then 50 and then 100. And then, all right, look, whatever happened and whatever he did, there's got to be at least a couple, right? Because like I said, I know these people. I see them. They talk to me. They whatever. That will, for a come up, they will do that for clout, for money. This is real money involved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They will just say, oh, hey, yeah, me, Deshaun Watson did that to me too. Where's my check? And they'll do it. And they have no doubt. They'll say that they'll do it. They'll tell me that they'll do it. They've done it to other people before. So to think that when you create this incentive that, hey, we just want to hear your voice. We want to give you a voice. We're not going to challenge anything that you say. And after it's over, you might actually even get a bag out of it. You set that precedent up. Well, then you're going to get, you know, 50 women. You know, the second that you have 1, 2, 3, 4, you might as well just go up to 150. I bet you that lawyer that has a 20 women, I bet you he stopped taking clients because he was like, you know, if I keep answering this phone, I'm going to be up to like 500 women and it's going to look crazy. So yeah. I got to 22. That looks good. That's it. I'm done. I'm not taking on any other woman. So, you know, like I said, I think that a lot of this is complicated because on the backdrop of everything that I'm saying, there are very, very real victims that for many years, no one has wanted to hear a word that they've said. And so now we're trying to figure out how to do it, right? And the media has kind of ways to do it and limitations. And obviously the courts have ways and limitations to dealing with it. And I think the way to combat it, I'm not sure if it's the media is a way to combat it. Maybe it's through social media. Maybe it's for the victims to be able to speak directly to people and, you know, answer whatever questions or do whatever they want to say, you know. But like I said, the idea of just kind of these medias and putting together these narratives, it just, as I'm reading it, as I was reading that article, I remember reading that article from Ronan Farrow. and thinking, this is ridiculous. And then he actually won a Pulitzer for that. And I remember I'm talking to other journalists and they're like, this is the most ridiculous thing. But no one can say anything. We all have to just say, oh, okay, Werner Farrow. Yeah, you know. Everyone is saying the exact same thing. This is, and I was talking to someone at a top editor at one of the most prestigious newspapers in the world. And we're having the same discussion that we're having there. Obviously, if this person wouldn't say any of this publicly, then they don't want to lose their job, or you know, they're in a more precarious position than me. I'm just telling you what I see. And I think that there's, you know, we've got to figure a way out of this. Because if we don't, we're allowing kind of the clout chaser, kind of fraudulent person that just kind of jumps on any story to, you know, whether it's about getting clout or getting a check or whatever, to just kind of drag these people, some of these people that are may be innocent, some of them may be guilty, but less, a lot less guilty than what the public thinks of them, you know? And I think,
if you incentivize people to tattletale, it reminds me of this abortion law. You probably read about this in Texas where that you can rat people out. You heard about that in Texas law and give people like $10,000 if they rat on someone having an abortion. I mean, that's not going to end well.
Right. I mean, that's the last thing that you want to do. And that's one other thing, you know, people are always like, oh, do you pay for tips? Almost never. Because once you inject money into it, like if you want to get fake stories, offer money. But you will get professional people that will give you the most convincing lies that you've ever seen. They will fake text messages. They will fake emails. They will fake FaceTimes. They will fake everything that they need to get that money. They treat their con men and con women. Mm. And that's what they do. And they will treat that as their job. Their job is fooling you into believing what they are. And they're good at it. They're very good at it. And like I said, I've come across them all the time. I come across them all day long. And I've seen them. And I think the majority of people that are out there, they've never seen these kind of people. And so they're just like, come on. Is there really a person out there who would make something like that up? Why would anyone do this? What do they have to lose? What do they have to gain? This is what the average person says. And that's what I thought too, until I came into this business and I saw these people in real life. And I was like, oh my God, these people are all over the place. Wow. You can't allow just unfettered people to talk because these people will come to the forward and take over.
Yeah, because that's what started to happen, I guess, in the last like few years where the stories got more like outrageous, and there were stories that, you know, like big, like the Michael Jackson story, like when that Finding Neverland came out, or Leaving Neverland, where it was like, I don't really know what happened, you know what I mean? So I watched that movie and I had the exact same thought. I was like, well, why would they say this? What do they have to gain to come out and do this? I don't know what your take on something like that is, but was that what did you think of that? Like Leaving Neverland, did that seem kind of credible or like that irresponsible? Or
I think so. I have a little bit of background about the Finding Neverland scenario that just makes me, putting aside everything that they've said, because like I said, you know, it's hard. If they are in fact victims and they claim to be, you don't really want to just come out there and say, well, I don't believe them. Right. Because I don't know. I wasn't there. Mm. Right. Like they're, it's their word against someone else's word. My word is not a part of that. But what I will say is that part of what kind of gets me is, you know, there was Wade Robeson, who was one of the people that was involved in there. He had been for years saying Michael Jackson is not, you know, he was a good friend of mine. Nothing ever happened. Everything was there. And then eventually he changed his story and he said, you know, obviously some horrible things happened between himself and Michael Jackson. Did some horrible things to him when he was a child. And so I was talking to someone that's affiliated with the Jackson family. He was like, oh, you know that right before Wade Robeson was changed his story, they were going to be doing a Michael Jackson like Vegas show, and Wade Robeson wanted to be the choreographer because he's a dance and a choreographer, And so he was good. He thought he was going to be the choreographer for this Vegas Michael Jackson show, which was going to be a gigantic show and make millions of dollars, maybe even billions. And for some reason, the Jackson family or whatever decided that they didn't want Wade Robeson to do that, to choreograph it.
Ooh,
and it move. Was after that move, that's when his story changed to this other thing. Now, is that a coincidence that so long as he, you know, there was this belief that there was some kind of financial benefit to being part of the Jackson family or affiliated with Jackson family, his story was everything was fine. And then once that went away, his story was, you know, hey, you know, this horrible thing happened. Now, obviously, he tells a totally different story. He says that there were repressed memories and he doesn't know what happened, which maybe that's true too, right? But like I said, this is, it's kind of one of the inherent skeptic in me, right? Like whenever I hear a story, I'm always like, is there something a little bit fishy with that story? And sometimes it's fishy and just nothing is ever as clean as it should be. And it just is what it is. But those are the things that would make me wonder and make me, you know, when he does come up with those, the allegations, it makes me look at them a little bit longer and a little bit harder. And that's the, so with Finding Neverland, I'm looking at it with that eye. So I may be a little more critical possibly than I should be.
Yeah.
And maybe more than a lot of other people are.
Cause I, there was another story. I don't know if it came out around that time, like right after the Weinstein thing where, I guess, so like, I think the National Enquirer broke it and it was, it was an insane story. It was about Charlie Sheen. I don't know if you remember. It was like where he sexually.
He popped off. You pop off?
Sorry.
I think I know the story about him, being sexually abusive to like Corey Haim and Corey Feldman.
Yeah,
that Feldman.
Was it. Yeah, my mic came out. Sorry. So like that story kind of was a huge story and then it was just gone. So I guess my question is how could they get away with putting a story like that out there?
That was a very bizarre story. And I think that I can't remember the exact details of it, but I suspect that what happened with that story is whoever they got their information from, they were convinced was reliable at first. And then at some point they began to question their reliability. Mm. I don't know where exactly that source came from or what it was that caused them to one, be so confident in them, and then two, lose confidence in them so quickly. I can tell you that I know Dylan Howard, who ran the National Enquirer before. He is probably one of the most thorough journalists in the world. So if he says that if he decides to go to print with something, I believe him. You know, that's just the way I tend to believe everything that he says. So I don't know, but that one was weird because like you said, there was like this, it was like an insinuation that he was doing this and then it went away and then it came back. I will say one other thing to that point and that story in particular, that Dylan Howard, National Enquirer, and Charlie Sheen actually do have a lot of history, particularly with that story about the HIV. So that was a story that took, I don't know, maybe a year and hundreds of thousands of dollars and thousands of men and women hours to actually break. The National Enquirer was talking to people. They had hired investigators. They were looking around at people. They were talking to people around him. They were talking to his lawyers. They were subpoenaing information. They were doing absolutely everything they can, dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's to getting it. And then they did what every top level journalist is supposed to do at the end of a story when they have everything on them. Usually when you have someone dead to rights, you call them up and you say, we've got you, you know, we're going to be doing a story saying X, Y, and Z. Do you have any comment? And that's why at the end of most stories, you'll say we reached out to a representative or whatever, and they have no comment. So that's usually what people do. And they did that to Charlie Sheen, and they got him, and then they called him up and they told him or his people or whatever that they were going to go on with the story that he has HIV and whatever else was in the story. And Charlie Sheen who was so upset because he'd been trying to thwart that story for many months. Mm-hmm. They'd been going back and forth, the lawyers or whatever. So what Charlie Sheen did is the second that he got that call, he like went on Twitter and basically announced that he had HIV to the world to basically upstage because he knew the National Enquirer was coming out on like a Wednesday. He did it on like a Monday.
Right.
So the big news story was Tuesday. Charlie Sheen has, you know, come out and told people the HIV. And that big story that cost millions of dollars and thousands of manned woman hours that the National Enquirer did had kind of went up in smoke. And I know for a fact that, you know, because that was sort of Dylan's like life work, right? Like that was going to be the biggest story, one of the biggest stories probably that we've ever seen. In terms of celebrity gossip, the amount of research and the ability to uncover something, I don't know that there was ever a story that was as well put together as that one. And Charlie Sheen completely undercut
right.
Him, right? And that was that's something that Dylan had to kind of deal with. And so, you know, after that, you see like a lot of negative Charlie Sheen stories. And maybe it was, you know, because there was some resentment was there and maybe that somehow clouded the National Enquirer thing. This is all speculation. I don't know.
Right.
I can tell you, like I said, that guy Dylan, when he says something, it is in fact true. He's done all the research. He's put in the work and it's in fact true.
Oh. Huh.
Because I remember, because that story was we'll wrap it up. That story seemed like such an insane story, and it was just kind of was like gone immediately. So I was kind of like, I didn't know what to believe.
I have no idea. I don't know any backstory to that, but that it just like when I see a story and I see something happen to it, I can generally tell what happens. And it's almost like sometimes people become really believable and they'll explain something to you and, you know, and you'll check them out and everything and it'll seem fine. And then maybe like a day later, they'll say something and then you'll be like, oh my God, I no longer trust them anymore. And so then you just have to just kind of do it. But if that ever happens, you have to, you know, as an editor, you have to fall on your sword. You have to say, look, I messed up. It happens. And you take it back. You say, look, we no longer have confidence in this person.
Can I just ask you one more thing? So you had mentioned before in that situation, you always reach out to the person for a comment. And then that's why you always see in those stories are like, we reached out to their representatives and they had no comment. Whenever I hear that, I always assume I'm like, that looks really bad for the person. Is that kind of like a known thing in, you know, gossip or media that like making that comment that they had no comment is bad for them?
Well, no, because like I said, that we reached out to them and had no comment. Sometimes it'll happen literally 30 seconds before the story goes live.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
Like, that is not a, you know, we've been working with them and talking about them and gave them a long time to think about this and discuss it. That's maybe the day before.
Mm-hmm.
It could be 30 seconds before. It could be, you know, a minute before, whatever else. That's just a standard, you know, people just trying to kind of stick with the standard and doing it. But they're not doing that anymore. And part of the reason why sometimes they do it 30 seconds before is because a lot of times the subjects will do exactly what Charlie Sheen did, right? Like he'll just give it to him the day before and they'll be like, okay, well, we're going to try and destroy your story.
Wow.
So you just say, okay, well, we're going to go, boop, boop, we put it out. There we go. We have covered our bases and you can't upstage our story.
That's really interesting. Yeah.
Maybe they're not conscious of it, but it always feels like when someone's like, oh, I plead the fifth in court, where you're like, oh, well, that doesn't look good.
It doesn't look good.
But
it's interesting. They really just want to do it at the last second because they don't want to be one upped, which makes sense. That really does make sense.
Okay. Well, we have to wrap this up, but thanks so much for coming on here.
Yeah, it was a great interview. Thank you so much.
This is really interesting. I'm like a huge pop culture and gossip junkie. Have you been watching? There's a show on Showtime right now called Gossip. Have you seen that?
I am. It's a great show. I'm actually in it. You keep watching. Yeah. In part four.
That's awesome. Like you must know Cindy Adams, right?
I do. Yeah.
It's kind of fascinating to watch how that whole, you know, and how that kind of in the media, how gossip became like a mainstream thing.
Yeah. She was a pioneer, right?
She is. I mean, that's the thing. I look at people like that. It's people in the New York Post, you know, they are the you know, the godfathers and godmothers of this industry. They birthed it. They know how to do it. And if you talk to them now, a lot of times they'll give you real tips. You know, a lot of times people think, oh, it's so much different, you know, because of the internet era or social media or whatever. It really is the same thing. Mm-hmm. Same things that they were doing and a lot of the same tactics they were doing, you know, actively talking to people, being respectful, recognizing that you're going to be in the industry as long as, you know, as long as them, or sometimes even longer. If you're Cindy Adams, right, she's seen everybody come and go, right? And then eventually people recognize Cindy Adams. She's always going to be here, you know.
Right. You might she's as well live with her. Strong, man.
You might as well live with her because she's going to be here. She's going to outlast you. So, yeah. You know. And
she's got a lot of
wisdom. Thanks a lot, guys.
So
Where are you right now? Because when you popped on, it looked like you were in a beach house or something. I don't know. Or it's undisclosed or a panic room.
No, it's actually my closet behind me. You know.
Okay.
The kids are in the other room doing homework, so I got.
Oh, okay.
Well, thanks so much for taking time out.
Yeah, you were great.
So Fred Mwanga Gahanga, did I say that right again?
There you go.
All right. Wow. Thanks again for coming on. And we'll see you guys next time. Thanks for tuning in. LA2B, rate and review and subscribe. And thanks again.